Praise the Lord. That's good singing. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. This is normally Brian's Sunday school class, but they had some special circumstances and asked me to take it this week, which I don't mind. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. We'll start reading at verse 1. I charge thee therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. But after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. I'm wanting to deal with this morning what that phrase is, says sound doctrine. Talking about sound doctrine, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. First thing that comes to mind that I need to point out is that he's making a statement. There's going to come a time when they, there's that undefined they, who's he talking about? They will not endure sound doctrine. I can see three clear ways to apply this verse. The first way, of course, is what the Bible does quite often. It prophesies. It tells what's going to happen in the future. And he says the time is going to come when they will not endure sound doctrine. There are two major apostasies taught in the New Testament. Two major apostasies. One that's going to happen, according to the apostles, when the apostles go away. When the apostles go away, remember what Paul said to the Ephesian church over there in Acts chapter 20? He says, after my departing shall many grievous wolves enter and not spare the flock, and they're going to want to take disciples after themselves and that sort of thing. They were constantly warning about an apostasy, a falling away, a move away from sound doctrine that was going to happen when the apostles were no longer present. And Paul, what did he say? He said, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace. So the answer, of course, was when this apostasy happens, you're going to have the Bible. You better hang on to it and understand it and learn it and know it so that you don't fall away with those that wind up falling away. That's the early apostasy. The apostasy sometimes called in the latter times or later days after the apostles die. And this happened. You'll read about it in the Timothys. Paul writes about it many times. Peter writes about it. It's mentioned many times. An apostasy that happens during the church age, during this time of the church, that comes about because of the lack of authority, that the apostles are no longer there to distinguish who is and who is not of God. And then you're left with just the Bible, and those who follow the Bible are of God, and those that don't follow the Bible are not of God. And that's how it worked out. And we see it right now. We see remnants of this apostasy that happened, you know, talking about forbidding to marry, and that's the celibacy found in the Roman Catholic institution, and also forbidding to eat meats, and we find that all through. We find these things prophesied that it's going to happen. There's another apostasy that's mentioned, and it's not the later days or the latter days. It talks about the last days, right toward the end, when Jesus said he's going to come back toward the end. Another apostasy is going to happen, and it's going to be a great falling away. This is the right before the coming of the son of perdition, that man that pretends that he's God and acts like God and claims to be in the place of God, that sort of thing. Peter mentions this apostasy that toward the end, they're going to deny creation, they're going to deny the flood, and he mentions these things particularly, and this is exactly what has happened in our day. Within the last couple of hundred years, they have come to deny creation, they've come to deny the flood, and because they deny these things, they have been caught up into some very bad doctrine. Even the church has fallen away toward these philosophies that deny creation. And that's what you'll get. And it's all over the place. They'll talk about a big bang, but they won't talk about the big banger, the one that made it all. They will talk about, you know, the origin of species, but they won't talk about the real source of the species, which is the mind of God. There's all sorts of things. In fact, they will build themselves up on Christian foundations and then pretend that Christianity and the doctrines of Christianity have been fighting against them all along, which is, of course, nonsense. Well, talking about apostasy, maybe it is. Maybe it's saying that toward the latter days, or later on after the apostles die, or maybe even toward the end times, the time is going to come when they will not endure sound doctrine. And I can see easily how we can apply it. I can see how we could apply that right now. I would say that all over the world, they're not willing to endure sound doctrine. Even Christians are not wanting to endure sound doctrine. Just look at the churches. You can go to all kinds of churches, and it doesn't matter what denomination or what have you. You will find out that they do not deal with doctrine anymore. And if you go to the Christian bookstores to find out what things Christians are buying, try to find something that deals with doctrine. They're all about self-help, and they're all about therapy, and they're all about, you know, getting ahead and prosperity and all kinds of stuff. But find a good, solid commentary explaining to you the Bible. Those are hard to find. And the reason why they're hard to find in bookstores is because Christians don't buy them. They're not interested. Another reason they're hard to find in the bookstores is because you can get them for free right down off the internet. So you really have no excuse. Anyway, it might be talking about apostasy. Another way you can see it is an application to individuals. Because individuals have a tendency to lose interest in doctrine, sound doctrine. And it happens. You know, I've heard it said, I don't really know where they got the statistic. I'd like to look it up and find it. But I've heard it said that the average Christian church life is 7 years. That the average Christian lasts 7 years in church. Have you ever met a Christian that says he no longer goes to church? They're all over the place. Yeah, I believe all that. I went to church, and I don't have any place right now. I'm not going right now. And I understand. I mean, seriously, if you look at the options that you've got where to go to church, I can see why they'd say, why bother? What's the point? Stay home and watch the Cowboys lose. Individuals lose interest in doctrine. Maybe doctrine gets boring. Maybe doctrine gets, you know, I don't know what it is. But people can lose interest. You can lose interest in the things that once interested you. I remember things that just intensely interested me in the past, and now I'm not interested in them anymore. But you can't afford to lose interest in sound doctrine, okay? But what I think he's talking about here is a trend in churches. He's telling Timothy, you've got some churches that you're in charge of, and Paul is giving a heads up. There's a trend in churches, and that is that they no longer want to endure sound doctrine. They start metamorphosizing from a church that's interested in doctrine to a church that's interested in other things. And he lists out some things here you got to watch for, and the reason why this trend happens. There is a trend among local churches that has a tendency to just move away from the defining doctrines of Christianity to things that are not really defining of Christianity. Things that basically any psychiatrist might be able to help you out with. And we've talked about it. Have you ever heard anybody complain about doctrine, about churches being so doctrinal, or things about doctrine? I've heard it claimed that doctrine is divisive. Now, is doctrine divisive? You bet you it sure is. And if unity was our goal? And so if God insists on emphasizing doctrine, sound doctrine, then obviously unity is not our goal. We used to preach in Mexico, and in Mexico, you're looking at 90% Catholic, if you want to call that. They're baptized Catholic. They don't go to church. So if you want to talk about actual Catholics that go to church, you're looking at maybe 5 to 10% who are actually Catholics that do go to church and actually, follow the precepts of their religion. And I respect those folks. Because they do. They're sincere. They're trying their best to do what their religion teaches them. Most of them, though, are not anything like it. But the idea is they were baptized Catholic, and that's the religion that they are loyal to. And so we go there, and we're preaching the gospel, and it's very pointedly different than what the Catholic Church teaches, because we believe in salvation by grace without works, and we do not believe in confession to a priest and those sort of things. And so we're preaching that, and they would constantly accuse us of causing division. And the truth is, I'm all for unity. I would tell them all the time, I want unity. I want unity if the Pope would just agree with me. We would be in unity. I would be in agreement with the Pope if he would agree with me. I mean, that's fine. I'm just not willing to give up sound doctrine in favor of unity. Unity is not our objective. Sound doctrine is our objective. And obviously God is saying, you pay attention to sound doctrine because unity is not my big deal. I want you to be unified. He even says, Lord, make them one, as even as we are one. Make them one. Make them an agreement. Make them have one mind and strive together for the hope of the gospel. But don't give up sound doctrine. And doctrine is divisive. If you preach the truth, you're going to have enemies. If you stand on any point in the Bible, even the really popular ones, you're going to find some people disagree with you. And they're going to disagree with you vocally, even to the point of persecution. All that will live godly shall suffer persecution, the Bible said. So you cannot have unity. Unity, first of all, is impossible. And second of all, it's not the goal of the Bible. It's not Christ's goal. The first goal, of course, is truth and salvation. And unity is great. If we can have truth and salvation along with unity, that's super. But we probably can't have unity. If you're going to have salvation, you're going to have enemies. Another thing I've heard about doctrine is that it's boring. That is a complaint against doctrine. Doctrinal churches are boring. I remember there was a fellow, he used to preach here in San Antonio. His name was Dwayne Spencer. And he would deal with the most tedious, dull subjects and just drone on and on. Now, maybe you guys love Dwayne Spencer, those of you who heard him. Maybe you thought he was just the most exciting, interesting, but I was a young preacher, a young Christian wanting to be a preacher, and I would listen to him and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Are you got to be kidding me? How in the world can you dwell on these issues? Have you ever gone to a church where they actually had a rebuilt tabernacle? I've been to churches where they actually studied the tabernacle and rebuilt it. I mean, they would have a scale model of the tabernacle in one of their Sunday school classes or what have you. I've been to those churches, and frankly, yeah, I kind of have to agree with people. Come on, that's just a little dull. Doctrine can be boring. And yeah, I agree. You're right. I don't think we have any excuse for making God's doctrines boring. I'm not making excuses for it. But if the option is, you know, we want something exciting that minimizes doctrine, or we want something that emphasizes doctrine and might not be quite as interesting as you would rather, well, then we have to go with doctrine. Because doctrine is what is the distinguishing characteristic of Christianity. Have you ever heard it said that doctrine kills? That was popularized by a fellow named Watchman Nee. Now, Watchman Nee was a Plymouth Brethren convert that really had a lot of insight in the Bible and started a church trying to base it on what the Bible, you know, what the Bible teaches. And yet he was very divisive in his way of insisting that other Christians follow this. And it turned out that his movement, he wound up getting killed by the communists. He was put in jail for 20 years, and before he got out, apparently they killed him. Now, that's an accusation I can't substantiate, but he was in perfect health. But a few days before he's supposed to get out, he dies mysteriously. Well, you know, I can connect the dots. They didn't want him out. But one way or the other, this man, Watchman Nee, has a group of followers now. They call themselves the local church. And I have had a lot of contact with this group. I have very few, irritations about them, except that they have some teachings that that are just plain wrong. For example, when they say that if you emphasize doctrine, you kill the spirit of life in the church. And the idea of theirs, this spirit of life is, you know, exciting and enthusiastic and movement and, you know, praise and those kind of things. And if you dwell on doctrine, what they really mean is if you dwell on your doctrine, they want you to dwell on their doctrine. I'm just going to tell you, Mr. Nee, Brother Nee, we love you. I think you had a lot of insight, what have you, but you're wrong. Doctrine doesn't kill. Sound doctrine gives life. Amen. Sound doctrine is life. In fact, that might be the definition of life. You want to understand what he's talking about when he talks about hard doctrine or sound doctrine. You can read all over in the New Testament, especially Paul talks about this over and over. In fact, I've got some lists. Let's look at a few. Look at the same book, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 13. Paul emphasizes this over and over again. Of course, I just went straight to 1 Timothy, so. It says, hold fast the form of sound words, which thou hast heard of me in faith and love, which is in Christ Jesus. He mentions it again. Sound words, and you need to hold them fast. Now let's go to 1 Timothy. Look at chapter 1, verse 10 of 1 Timothy. He says, let's read verse 9. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for whoremongers, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men stealers, for liars, for perjured persons, and if there be any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine. So sound doctrine opposes these sort of things. Sound doctrine is opposed to sin. Look at chapter, we'll move up a little bit, look at chapter verse 3 and 4. What Paul says, as I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went into Macedonia, that thou mightest charge some that they teach no other doctrine, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies which minister questions rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do. So, sound doctrine is godly edifying. It edifies us in godliness. It instructs us in the way of righteousness. That's what he's talking about when he says sound doctrine. Look at chapter 6 of 1 Timothy. Paul repeats this same idea many times. Chapter 6, look at verse 1. Let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, that the name of God and His doctrine be not blasphemed. Did you know that God's doctrine can be blasphemed? Mainly, what that is saying is that what we know of God is His doctrine. And that blaspheming God is blaspheming His doctrine. And blaspheming His doctrine is blaspheming God. Because that is the expression of God to us. It's His doctrine. It's what He's taught us. God is a teacher. I'll show that even better later on. Look at verse 3. If any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he's proud. He knows nothing. He's doting about stuff. He says, we need to pay attention to the sound words and wholesome words, words that impart health and life and all of our blessings. And I believe we can prove that it's God's doctrine that has imparted all of these blessings. Look at Titus. Look at Titus chapter, look at chapter 1 verse 9. Talking about when you choose, he's talking about to Titus saying when you are getting ready to appoint elders in the churches, you need to find someone that's like this. He says, holding fast the faithful word as he hath been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers. What's the opposite of that? For there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers, especially they of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped. How? By sound doctrine. Their mouth must be stopped. Who subvert whole houses, teaching things which they ought not for filthy lucre's sake. So you see the emphasis that he's saying, our protection is sound doctrine. What is There's more I could go to. I'm not going to. I have a tendency to underestimate how long something's going to take me. Deb constantly asks me, how long is this, I got something to do. How long do you think that's going to take? Well, I'm figuring about 6 hours. You can calculate it's going to be three times that long. Just because I said 6 hours, it's going to be 18 straight hours. And it's going to hurt. Right? So I have a tendency to underestimate how long something's going to take me. So I'm trying to keep it brief. People complain about sound doctrine. There was something. Oh, yes, here. What are the distinctions of the Christian religion? Does anybody know what is different about the Christian, besides the fact that it comes from God? Which it does, by the way. The Christian religion comes from God. It's not something people developed. It's a progressive system of revelation. God reveals a little bit, reveals a little more. And if you see these revelations in their order and how they were revealed, you see that God is teaching humanity about himself through prophets a little at a time over, and then we have the whole thing collected in a book, and it's a teaching of God. But I'm talking about somebody just looking at religions could distinguish in historical religions could distinguish Christianity from others by several facts. I think the first one has to be that the Christian religion is miraculous. And I don't mean these false, fakey miracles. I mean really, really miraculous. Now you say, some people might say, well, I don't believe that he parted the Red Sea. You know, I don't believe that he did those kind of things. But there's all kinds of miraculous elements of Christianity that you can't hardly deny. You personally, really, if you're at all sincere, you cannot deny that something happened with the body of Jesus. I mean, where is it? Where did it go? Even his enemies didn't know where it was. His enemies said the disciples stole it. Something happened to it, and it transformed the lives of these men. Something happened that changed the world. There was a miracle involved there, and miracle over and over. How in the world did Jesus convince people that he was the Christ? It was because of his miracles. Miracle after miracle after miracle, and not just what's written in the Bible. If you will find, I'm going to tell you something about Christianity, you will find that miracles have followed it all the way through. I believe miracles are happening right today. Now, I want you to remember, miracles happen where Christians are weak. It's in our weakness that he is made strong. Where Christians are empowered, or strong and powerful, you see very few miracles. The only miracles you see are those fakey ones on television where somebody's ingrown toenail gets healed. You know, that's the only kind you can see nowadays. But the truth is, where Christians are suffering or where Christians are weak, there are miracles recorded right now. If you get some of these missionary journals where they're pointing out Christians who are suffering in other countries, you will find out miracles are happening. Even today, things are happening that are unexplainable, and sicknesses that heal, and answers to prayer that can truly shock you. One thing about Christianity is that it is miraculous. There is a power of God behind these doctrines. Let me tell you something else. It is it's transforming. If you want to know what really distinguishes Christianity, it's how it takes a person who was an enemy and all of a sudden they're completely changed. And you can see it in the foremost example in Paul the Apostle, who was so against Christianity, and in one instant he's changed. Completely transformed. We're not talking about just quit fighting. We're talking about completely on the other side. As zealous as he was against, now he is that zealous for. This has been repeated so many times throughout history. In fact, you can see it in this room. You can see lives that have been transformed, night and day difference, in an instant of time by the power of Jesus Christ, his Spirit. And this is one of the things that the detractors of Christianity cannot overcome. Even I have heard atheists say, we don't agree with Christianity, but we are pretty impressed how it has changed people from night to day. It is a transforming power. People are transformed. They're born again. Something happens in their mind. That's also a miracle. It's something that God does, and it's impossible to explain other than the fact that God's Holy Spirit is still working in people. But there is a third distinction of Christianity, and that is its wholesome doctrines. Almost every other religion has doctrines that are destructive. You remember, well, you start reading stories of missionaries where they went. All kinds of Christian missionaries that go all over the world and the religions that they run up against. And see how self-destructive these religions have been historically. When the Franciscan missionaries got to the shores of the New World, and they found these religions that were here, you know, the Native American religions. I know that in the 60s, Native America became very popular, and everybody started really praising, you know, the earth-worshipping Native Americans. But those cultures that they came and found were not helpful. They were not healthy. It was not sound doctrine that they were believing. They had doctrines that destroyed them. They had doctrines that decimated them. Do you realize that this continent is just as old as the old continent? And that people have been living here just about as long. The difference between that continent and this continent is that the doctrines were healthier in the old continent. You know, I can guarantee you that's the difference. The reason why there were so few inhabitants of North America is because of the doctrines that they had where they killed each other. Do you realize that the Aztecs would go out and wage war just to gather human sacrifices? And they could sacrifice them thousands at a time. Thousands at a time just to kill them. They warred each other. It was bad doctrine. You think in some way that was a more ecologically friendly doctrine. Nonsense. Nonsense. I'm telling you, there is no comparison to pagan doctrines as to God's doctrine. The sound doctrine in the Bible. Whether it's the missionaries that went over to India and actually found the case where they would burn a living wife with her dead husband. Or they would actually sacrifice the healthier of twins that were born. This is not healthy doctrine. These are not healthy doctrines. The doctrines of polygamy. All over the world. All over the world until Christ. Until Christ makes some points. And let me tell you something. The Christian doctrines. Hey, you know, I've heard so many people accuse the Bible of being the problem. I actually have atheistic feminist women say that the Bible is the problem for women. That it suppresses women. Don't have a clue. They don't have a clue what the Bible has done for women. What the Bible teaches of how a husband should treat his wife. Find some pagan culture in antiquity before Christ where the husband treated his wife the way the Bible teaches that a husband should treat his wife. As his own flesh and nourishes her and loves her and treats her good. Yeah, there's no chivalry outside of Christianity. Doesn't exist. It's our doctrine. When he says doctrine is sound, he means it's reasonable, it's substantial, and it's healthy. That's what he means when he says sound doctrine. It's reasonable, it's sound, it's not crazy. And there's an awful lot of doctrines out there that are crazy. And I just mean that literally. It is actually insane. So many doctrines, like some of the ones I just mentioned, these are insane doctrines. And I got news for you. Some of these modern atheistic doctrines are also insane. The doctrine of evolution, folks, listen, that is insane. It is not true. It's not only is it not true, it's been falsified by every experiment they've ever tried. It's been proven false. Falsified. Whatever the test, whatever the experiment that you want to propose to prove it true or not. Propose it. Go ahead. Do it. And every time it'll come out false because it didn't happen. And anybody who's done any programming in computer language knows code does not write itself. You cannot get DNA by accident. It's not possible. It's not a true doctrine. It's a false doctrine. And you want to know how unhealthy that doctrine is? You ever heard of eugenics? Have you ever heard of social Darwinism? You ever heard of Hitler? You ever heard of communism? All of those are direct results of Darwinism. Evolution of the species, survival of the fittest, all that nonsense. Let me tell you something. God designed species. That's the way they got their origin. They did not develop over time. They were designed and put in place by God, and they worked when He put them together. They worked, and that's the only way they could be. God's doctrine is reasonable. All the doctrine beforehand, for example, such tremendous doctrines as a transcendent God. This is a doctrine that comes from the Bible. Nowhere else. Sorry, folks. You're not going to find it in ancient Buddhism or ancient. Those are pantheistic religions that believe that that nature is eternal. And if there are gods, they are subject to nature. Have you ever read the Greek mythology? You know, these little puppet gods like Zeus, Mercury, all these gods, all of these gods were subject to nature. Because they considered nature to be eternal, the fabric of the universe, that was eternal, and everything that's living in it was subject to it. But the Bible doctrine is we have a transcendent God that is not subject to nature, that created nature, and everything does what it does according to His will, according to His design and His desire. That is God's doctrine, and boy, is that more reasonable. It's reasonable. It's substantial. It's not a waste of time. You don't sit there and lose your time studying God's doctrines. His doctrines are substantial. They give you such insight, such knowledge. Do you realize that people, it's hard to even know where to begin to tell you how people do not realize what God's doctrine has done for us and how much we are built upon His doctrines, the doctrines of the Bible. Even people who hate God are standing on a foundation of God's doctrines. God's doctrines. They're substantial. They actually get to the meat of the problem. They actually explain to you what really is helpful for you. They actually show you, they put in order the things that you need to do in order to have a healthy, well, good life. These are substantial doctrines, whereas so many religious doctrines are just fluff, nonsense. I don't know if you've ever read Gnostics, Gnostic doctrines. If you ever, listen, it's worth it just to get a laugh. Go onto your internet and type in Gnostic literature and read some of it. You have never read something so insane and nonsensical in your life. I don't know how anybody ever took it seriously. I certainly can't. It's just nonsense. But you read the New Testament, and that's a whole different ballgame. Everything it's teaching. Every time Jesus opens His mouth, He's giving us information that's extremely valuable. How about where Jesus says to those Pharisees that sent to tempt Him, He says something like, give unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things which are God's. Anybody ever heard of the doctrine of the separation of jurisdictions? Where do you think that came from? It came from Jesus Christ, who said, give unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. How about the doctrine of public service? Do you realize that we have government offices that are called ministries? The Ministry of the Interior. The Ministry of Defense. Do you know what that word ministry means? It means service. It comes from the concept that anybody who is in charge or has authority is actually a servant of the public. Where do you think that doctrine came from? It didn't come from kings. It did not come from Confucius. It came from Jesus Christ. He said, if anybody wants authority, let him first be a servant. And everybody in the Bible is called a servant. Even the king is called a servant. He is a minister of God. Even the executioner, even the policeman, they are ministers of God. Servants of God. And that you are to follow those who have ministered and you do what they say. They command you because they've ministered to you. It's the idea of public service. That is what democracy is supposedly about, right? All of this comes from God. In fact, every time He opens His mouth, you ought to try reading between the lines. Because He's telling you a lot. You remember back over there when God tells Saul that He's done with him. He tells Samuel He's done with Saul. He says, Samuel, I want you to go over there and you're going to appoint another king. A king that I found that's after my own heart. He's a son of Jesse. So he goes over to Jesse's house and the son of Jesse comes out. Eliab, number one son. Big guy. Looked like a king. Solid, man. This guy was solid. And God says, no, not him, Samuel. And that's all he had to say. Samuel would have obeyed. Okay, God, not him. That's fine. But God's a teacher. He said, Samuel, you're looking at the outside. You're looking at the outward appearance. I look at the heart. You see how God's teaching? God's telling you He's going to judge your heart, not your outward appearance. He's not even going to judge your outward works. He's going to judge your heart. Do you realize how important that doctrine is? You can't hardly read the Bible without absorbing His doctrines. Sound doctrines. Now, they're not just substantial, but they're healthy. In other words, they produce a healthy, joyful life. His doctrines do. Now there are all kinds of doctrines in the world that will destroy your life. And when the Bible says something like, be not drunk with wine, that's a doctrine. And the reason why he says that is because if you have an inclination that you like to get high, your life is going to be destroyed. You know what that tells you about marijuana? Yeah, you do. You understand that perfectly, didn't you? You see, God's telling you something. God's given you doctrine that's healthy for you. What about when God tells you about the order of the family? Yeah, he's telling you what's healthy. I know it's hard for you women to believe, but he's telling you what's healthy. He's telling you what's going to make your children happy. He's telling you what's going to make your home happy. He's telling you what's going to really work. And you can say, no, I don't believe that. I believe in equality, egalitarianism, or whatever that is. You believe anything you want. If you want a healthy life, you follow sound doctrine, which is God's doctrine. And boy, have I gotten nowhere where I was hoping to head for. He wants us to understand. All right. Let's go back to our text. I have got 10 minutes. I'm going to get it all in 10 minutes. You watch. There are four phrases here that are going to explain to you what the deal is. There are four phrases. Let's see if we can find them and parse them. Chapter 4, I was in 2 Timothy chapter 4, and we're going to look at verse 3. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. Now here are the four phrases, but after their own lusts, there is the first phrase, own lusts. On the second phrase, it says, after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers. Heap to themselves teachers. Okay? And then it says, having itching ears. That's a third one. Having itching ears. And then the fourth one is, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. Turn unto fables. All right. Let's look at those very briefly. Own lusts. You know what lusts are? Desires. Natural cravings. You understand what lusts are. I think we all understand that. What happens if your doctrines are according to your lusts? I mean, what happens if the doctrine is subordinate to your lusts? Where what you naturally crave, you make sure your doctrines follow that. And think about what he says, your own lusts. Meaning it's a personal preference on your part. You get to choose. Tell me what that tells you about who, about a hireling ministry. Think about it, because this tells you something about a hireling ministry. You see, if you have a church government that is controlled by members of the congregation, and the pastor is a hireling pastor, hired and could be fired by the members of the church, what does that tell you? What's going to happen? It's going to be your own lusts that run the show. Your own lusts are going to decide the doctrines. Your own cravings, your own desires, what you prefer, your own preference. You know, the Bible is way beyond that. The Bible is so much more sound than all of our best inclinations, and I just don't have time to get into democracy and what that deals with in the church. But I can just tell you one thing. The church government that the Bible talks about an independent ministry. The minister preaches what God tells him to preach, and it makes no difference what the people want. That's God's way. That's what God demands. And what God is telling the preacher is, you preach what I say, and don't worry about what they say. Don't worry about what the congregation wants to hear. Do you realize that he says they shall not endure sound doctrine? What they have against doctrine is that it's hard to endure. It's difficult. It's difficult. It's hard to believe. It's hard to understand. And it's hard to practice. Doctrine that God gives us is hard. It's not easy. Like everything in life that's worthwhile is hard. Nothing in life that is worthwhile is easy. If it's easy, you're wasting your time. Aim a little higher. Okay. Natural desires. What about when it says your own lust? Does that have something to do with, you know, like freedom and not being condemning and, you know, not demanding? Yeah, that's exactly what he's talking about. You're heaping doctrines about your own lust. If your own lusts are running the show, that's, you got the problem there. It's also a control issue. Your own lusts. Now let's move on to the next phrase. Heap to themselves teachers. What is it about teachers? Difference between teachers and preachers. See, I have a whole study on preaching, so that's a whole different thing. I can't go into that. But there is a difference between preachers and teachers. And everybody who preaches ought to have teaching in his preaching. But you know the difference. It was the difference between Jesus and the scribes. What was the difference described? They said, Jesus taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes who just taught as experts. You see, expert opinions. People want expert opinions. Nobody wants a dogmatic statement of truth. Nobody wants someone who speaks with authority. Jesus says, it has been told of you in old times. And the scribes say, but I say, wow. And they're all just like, what do you mean you say? Who art thou that thou sayest so much? You know, that sort of thing. Jesus taught them as one having authority. Now let me tell you what a preacher is. A preacher is a man called of God to speak God's words regardless of what people want to hear. And God says, speak with authority. You speak as the oracles of God. You speak what that Bible says, you have the authority to say it. You have the authority to stand on it. You have the authority to stand up and say, this is what God says. It's authority. People don't like that. I don't know if you notice that. People do not like you being dogmatic. You know, I tell someone, a lawyer talking to me, and she finds out I'm a Christian, and all that's great, because, you know, she can tell that I'm a Christian by my ties or something else, and she says, oh, you're a Christian, whatever, that's great, whatever. And she pulls out her little Virgin of Guadalupe and shows me. I said, well, you see, what I understand is that's idolatry. People don't like dogmatism. I could have said, you know, for me, my opinion, my tradition, my way of thinking, that there is a possibility that that could be construed as idolatry. And probably wouldn't hurt her feelings. That's idolatry. That bothers people. Just to let you know. Something else it says, heap to themselves teachers. Do you realize people like variety? They don't want the same old doctrine all the time. Let's try something. Let's have some variety. Everybody wants variety. And you know there's an expert on every side of every subject. I have got to move along. Okay, let's go to the third one, itching ears. Heaping to themselves teachers having itching ears. Now this is a metaphor. It doesn't actually mean that their ears are itching. But you've had itching ears, right? Well, let me tell you something about itching ears. First of all, that it's a superficial thing. People want superficial solutions. They want superficial stuff. Everybody wants superficial. And what Jesus says, what God says, I'm not looking at the outward appearance, I'm looking at the heart. And your problem is way deeper than the surface. Your problems are way deeper. And if you'll solve the deeper inward problems, the outward problems just kind of solve themselves. But if you just deal with all these outward solutions, all these symptom dealings, then you'll get absolutely nowhere. But the person giving you these superficial solutions keeps getting paid. All right? It's superficial. It's novel. People want something new. Itching ears. You want something new. You want, and let me tell you something else. It's indiscriminate. If you have itching ears, almost anything will do to solve that problem. Have you ever had an itch? It doesn't matter. Your hands could be full and you can still solve that. You know, rub yourself up against something if you've got an itch. A back scratcher works great, but a broken pencil works pretty good too to solve an itch. Itches is a superficial problem that is indiscriminate in what it needs. And people are indiscriminate. People are not willing to reject somebody over their bad doctrine. And because people have itching ears, they just want something to satisfy that superficial problem that they've got, not realizing the itch is not your problem. You've got a much deeper problem, and your deeper problem has to do with your understanding or lack thereof. All right. And turned unto fables. This is probably the biggest one nowadays, and that's why I'm telling you, I worry about all the metaphor. No offense, Danny, I know you love metaphor, but I worry about all the metaphor, all of the preaching that has to do with types and symbols. And that's because I have seen so much fable. I have dealt with the Roman Catholic doctrine for so long, dealing with such fables as stories of saints and what saints can do, and stories of fakey miracles that supposedly happened. And I'm telling you, fable is dangerous. But look at what we're talking about here, the value of entertainment. And that is exactly where we've come to. Right now, nowadays, churches have veered away from sound doctrine, and now they emphasize entertainment. They call it worship. But it's not worship. It's entertainment. And you can get a man who's up there singing a song, yes, and at the precise moment in the song, every single time he sings that song, he'll pull a hanky out of his pocket and wipe away a tear. That's not worship. That's entertainment. It's all superficial. And what happens when the churches start going toward that? What happens when the churches want to be entertained rather than filled with understanding? When you start craving the entertainment, when you say, I like that church better over there because it has better entertainment value, then you've missed the boat. You've lost it. What did Paul say? He said the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. It's hard to believe. It's hard to understand. And it's hard to practice. And they won't endure it. They won't put up with it anymore. He says, what do? You preach the word. You be instant, in season and out of season, and you exhort and you rebuke and you reprove with all long-suffering and doctrine. You don't let them up from the doctrine. You just keep on pounding away at the doctrine. And if you start studying the doctrines that this book is responsible for and how our lives are built on its foundation, you can stop criticizing Christianity or the Bible or any of these other unbelieving nonsense. You can start trusting what God said, because what He said is true. His doctrine is healthy. It's substantial. It's sound doctrine. And if you follow this doctrine, your life will be on a sure foundation. You will have the joyful life that you envisioned. But it's not easy. It's something that requires some effort. You have to understand. And I'm out of time.